Hello there. Welcome. Fireside with Peter Adkisson. I am Peter Adkisson, and our guest today is Mark Rosewater. Our co-host Beverly Marshall Sailing is not with us today because she's got a little bit of a cold, bronchitis or something. But we have Kristen Jensen, who is my director and is on other Gen Con TV channels. Speaking of Gen Con TV, that's where you're at. In this show, Fireside, we go in search of untold stories behind your favorite games. And in this season, we are focusing on Mark Rosewater.
We have an entire season.
Dedicated. It's a new season. Starts today, ends tomorrow. Season behind the scenes of Mark Rosewater with our special guest, Magic the Gathering. Hi, Magic. Nice to have you to be here.
I mean, Mark is Magic the Gathering, right?
He is. Like, that was like a Freudian slip. You are these days, Magic.
Well, I mean, we have a huge team of people that make Magic.
Yes,
so
of course you do.
I might be the face of R&D, but there's a lot of people that make the game.
Yes.
And
yes.
We keep getting bigger, by the way. Yeah. Like back when I first started working, there was 4 people in Magic R&D,
right.
And now we have like 80 something. So it's a lot bigger.
Holy cow.
We've absorbed editing. We've absorbed the creative team.
Okay.
So there's parts that used to be separate.
I always knew R&D was out to absorb all those departments.
Yes, absorb them all in. So.
Well, thank you for coming and joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
So as you know, on this show, we are going back in time. Back in time to the 90s.
The 90s.
I like the 90s.
Because I was there. So,
yes.
Hey, you know, it's a good topic for me to talk about. A lot of fun. And I think that it's great to go back and hear stories about how this wonderful, wonderful game happened. So, we are here today to hear your stories.
From the 90s.
From the 90s.
I have many stories from the 90s.
Let's get to them. Okay, so let's start with where were you before Magic? Like what was Mark Rosewater doing before you got involved with Magic the Gathering?
And so I graduated college in 1989.
You went to college?
I did. Boston University College of Communications.
All right, excellent.
And then I went out to Los Angeles because I was going to write for television. That was what I was going to do.
That's right.
And I did a little bit of that. I was on staff at Roseanne. That's my big claim to fame.
I remember that now.
And
now
anyway, I was in the middle. I was trying to get a job, and I was doing a lot of writing. And writing is a very solitary profession.
Right.
So I decided to take a part-time job in a game store, literally just to be around people, because I was just going stir crazy. And I thought games would be fun, because I like games. I've always been a gamer. My dad was a gamer. And I've been a gamer since I was a little kid.
Yep.
And so I thought working in a game store. In fact, I worked at The Gamekeeper, which Wizards would later buy many years later.
Did you play D&D when you were a kid?
I did play D&D,
because we have a lot of D&D fans here.
Oh, yes,
You know, not just Magic fans, but D&D fans.
For my bar mitzvah, my first grade teacher who lived on my street came to my bar mitzvah and gave me a box of D&D. That's why I got into D&D.
When was this about? When?
This would have been, let's see, it would have been 1980.
Okay, you're not supposed to ask D&D. Him exactly when he got
that. Wasn't trying to get at how old he is. I was trying to get at, like, which this is very important to D&D players. Like,
by the way,
which edition was
which
it
did
that
you
were
with?
I have a Wikipedia page. My age is not like a secret or something. So
good. Okay. So you started working the Gamekeeper.
Yes.
And how did you hear about Magic the Gathering?
Okay, so what happened is people were coming in asking about this game. And sometimes some didn't even know the name of it. Like, it's this Magic game, and they would describe it to me. Now, we didn't have it at the time.
Right.
So this is the summer of 93.
Okay.
And so we're talking
93.
Like this like August they're coming in.
That's the year Magic the Gathering came out.
Yes.
We like to recap some of the timeline stuff.
Magic came out. It was the premiere to Gen Con in August 6th, I think, 1993.
It was first shown to the public at Origins.
At Origins, right.
And we released it at Gen Con. That was where we actually had product to sell and advertising and all
so forth. So anyway, in August, people are coming to my games. Now, the other big thing about Magic that people might not realize was it was very geographically located at the time that you guys were really, the West Coast is where it started, and that it wasn't. It took a little while. I'm not super long, but it took a little while to get out to the East Coast. But
weeks, actually.
Yeah, like weeks. But anyway, in August of 1993, I was in California, kind of down to LA, and people were coming into my store and saying, "This game, do you have this game?" And as people would describe it to me, I'm like, "That sounds really cool. What is that?"
I wish I had that.
And so I went to San Diego Comic Con like a week or two later, because that's also in August.
Right.
And or at the time it was in August. I think now it's in July. But I went down there and I was able to see it for the first time. They didn't have it for sale, because heaven forbid you could buy Magic. But I got to see it for the first time. And then, 2 weeks later, there was OrcaCon, I think it's called. There's a big gaming convention. There's three of them in Los Angeles.
Perhaps one of the Strategicon conventions. Well,
maybe. Yeah. And so anyway, I went to one of those that was in August, at the end of the summer, and they had Magic for sale.
Right.
And so I bought a starter and three boosters.
Okay.
Because, well, like, how much you, like, I spent like $20. Like, how much you spend on a game?
Yeah, how much you
And then someone taught me how to play.
Right.
And then I got hooked very quickly.
And
then
those
I went
Alpha cards?
Alpha.
Those were Alpha cards.
I got Alpha. And then I went to the store to get more, and then I learned, oh no, you can't just walk in the store and buy Magic.
And just get some more.
So what happened was I found out when Beta was coming out, because Beta was the next release. I went to the store, I bought two boxes of starters,
display boxes.
And two display boxes of boosters.
Right.
Because I knew that I was bringing people to play with.
That's about right. Yeah. Yeah. That, if you're looking for how many Magic cards to buy, if you're just getting into it, that's about right.
Well, the reason I did that was I knew I would have to sell it to my friends because I wanted other people to play with.
Well, of
and
course.
They couldn't go to the store and buy it because it'd be gone.
No, no one would buy that many Magic cards and keep them all for themselves.
So anyway, I bought it and I sold it to my friends.
Right.
The funny thing is I sold it to my friends, and then later I went back to all my friends that didn't get into Magic and said, can I buy them back from you?
Did you jack up the prices?
I did not. I sold it to them at cost. I mean, at my cost, at the cost of the product.
Right.
But anyway, so I got into Magic, and then I started going. There was a convention, and then I started going to a local store that had Magic Nights.
Right.
And so in January of 1994, they released The Duelist, which was the magazine that
was dedicated. I thought you were going to say Arabian Nights.
No, Arabian Nights was December of 1993.
Right, close enough. Right.
So they released
Duelist Magazine.
Duelist Magazine, which was a... So what's about time this thing called magazines, where they would print on paper, and you could...
What?
So we made a magazine. Wizards made a magazine called The Duelist, and Duelist 1 came out, and I read it. And I was at the time, by the way, there was just nothing written about Magic. There were really, I think Shadus Magazine was the first ever to, like, even list what the cards were.
Right.
There's very little information. So I was so excited. A whole magazine dedicated to Magic. And I read it, and I was very excited. But it didn't have a lot of advanced content. It was a very basic content.
Right.
So at the next Los Angeles Game Convention, whatever the next one was, I went to the Wizards had a booth.
Right.
And I met Steve Bishop at the booth.
Steve
used to run the organized play department. He used to wear all leather. And anyway, so I met Steve at the convention.
We did have Ryus on our show.
Yeah, oh, did you?
Ryus represented the certain faction of early Wizards employees.
Right. There's a rule in early org play. If you didn't wear leather, they just didn't let you in the org play team, I think was
they kind of staked out a kingdom.
Right, and they would cover the lights.
Pretty careful.
Like the lights were all gelled, so it's dark. Anyway,
right,
so.
Yeah.
I love how, like, every guest you have, Peter, there's increasingly, like, more bonkers stories about the organized play folks and, like, the goths in the office. And soon enough, it's just going to be like, the entire office was just goths.
Oh, I know.
This is the story I tell, which is, at one point, Wizards tried to get an outfit for a convention. So the outfit was
a t-shirt
that just had any Wizards product on it, jeans and tennis shoes. And then, no, that is too much. And we had to stop it because they're like, I want to wear what I want to wear. And so they didn't do the thing. So, but anyway, that was like us trying to have like some sort of thing at conventions.
Some sort of uniform.
Some
sort of
corporate identity.
Yeah.
Right.
No. Anyway, Wizards was very fun. Wizards in the 90s, lots of fun. But anyway, so I went to talk to Steve Bishop.
Right.
And I said to him, I had an idea for something for the magazine, which was a puzzle column.
Right.
And he gave me the name of Catherine Haynes, who was the editor of The Duelist.
Yes, Catherine Haynes.
And so I made up, he gave me an address and stuff, and I made some samples of the puzzles, and I sent them in.
Right.
And then nothing. Months went by, I didn't hear anything. So I finally call up and get Catherine on the phone, and I'm like, hey, my name is Mark Rosewater, I sent these puzzles in. And she goes, oh yeah, those are great. I'm like, are you going to use them? And she goes, it's going in the next issue. Like, no one had told me, and so issue 1.5, because it took so long to get them out, they did like a mini issue.
Right.
Issue 1.5 had my first puzzle.
And by the way, I just got to throw in right now, those puzzles were fantastic.
What were
thank you.
They were like, okay, I'll explain. That way I really did, I really did try and solve them. So it would lay out a situation in Magic.
Okay.
Like you literally like a picture of which cards were in play. Uh-huh. Some of them. There were some variations.
Yeah.
What's in your hand, you know, maybe what's in your graveyard, whatever was pertinent.
Sure.
And it would say, okay, it's your turn and you gotta do, there's a way of doing, of killing your opponent or stopping him or her from killing you.
Or like
a moment.
In the, in like Duels of the Planeswalkers or the sort video game.
Yeah, it's kind of like a chess puzzle.
Like
but a chess puzzle.
Like it's this moment in the game, like a chess puzzle, right? Yeah. It's this moment in the game.
Yeah.
Here's
okay.
the setup. Here's what you need to know. How are you going to solve this? And they were hard. I mean, like I remember looking at the first one and thinking, or you know, I tried to solve them. I actually gave up at some point. I was like, oh, these are
too hard
for me.
Were the answers included somewhere else?
So the way it worked is we would put the puzzles in the magazine, and then the next magazine, which would be 2 months later, would have the answers in it.
Right.
But I was on the internet, I mean, or the Usenet at the time, and I would let people send me personally, like, this was back in the day, we're like, oh, if you have answers, send me, I'll tell you if you're right. But anyway, the answers were the next month, or next issue, basically.
Okay.
And the funny thing was, in the magazine, I rated the difficulty, and then in the Duels Convocation, I did the super difficult. And those were like 98 steps to, like, the super, super complicated ones.
Right. Wow.
Like, the ones in the magazine would be like, 10 steps or 15 steps, and maybe the difficult ones would be 30 steps. But I did the super, super hard ones, and the Duels Convocation was a flyer just for people in the DCI.
It had a newsletter. In fact,
In
fact, I think Ryze had a copy of it. We might have.
Oh, I have some. Yeah.
So anyway, job on the puzzle,
well, thank
Mark.
You.
I think it was seriously. Establish a certain credibility for you that probably that led to more work and
so
on and so forth.
So what happened was I did the puzzles. Puzzles were very big success.
Right.
And so what happened was I decided to fly myself to Gen Con in 94.
Good decision, by the way. highly recommend it. We're still in business, by the way.
I will say, as you will see, Gen Con is the cornerstone of my magic career.
Yes.
With Genstone.
Yes.
Gen Con, sorry. Gen Con was corner. So
it's renamed now. It's Genstone now.
Genstone now.
So what happened was I fly there, because I talked to Catherine on the phone, but I never met Catherine before. And so I go there, because I'm just pitching, I want more work.
Right.
So I go there to meet Catherine, who's awesome. So I say to her, I wanna write some stuff. And so she's like, pitch me ideas. So I pitched two things like right there on the spot. One is I said, can I write an article about Gen Con from a perspective of a Magic player?
Right.
And the second thing was the very first world championships are gonna be held at Gen Con. I said, could I cover the finals?
Right.
She goes, sure, you can do both those things.
Right.
So in fact, there's a very, very famous picture of the very first world championship, Zach Dolan playing Bertrand Lestray.
Right.
And there's this little young kid there wearing an underdog shirt, marking everything. And whenever we show that picture, they're like, is that you? Like, that's me. And so I recorded everything. And at the time, the rules were we weren't allowed to list the decks because we didn't want to this was early Magic.
Right.
The idea was, Richard was like, we want people to learn for themselves, so we didn't release deck information. And so I would like record it. And so because I record in such detail, like people would have to, like, you could figure out the deck by looking at what I said was there. So in the Duels Convocation, we listed literally, I like turn by turn, we listed everything that happened.
This is what happened, okay.
This is what was in their hand, this is what they played. And the early decks, they could kind of figure them out from my detailed explanation. Now, years later, eventually I became the editor-in-chief of the Duelist. I later put the deck list in the Duelist because I kept them.
Right.
And then I put them in the Duelist, so now they're public. Mm-hmm. But in the early Magic, no one asked, like, well, we know Bertrand played these cards and Zach played these cards, but
I remember that World Championship for a different way.
Okay,
just from the fact that we were selling Magic. This is Gen Con 94.
94, yeah.
Yeah, Magic's doing really well. Mm-hmm. It's selling over the place. We're having a lot of excitement around it, and we'd start organized play as a big thing like we know it now. What didn't exist, but there were starting to be tournaments, and we held this World Championship, and I remember I think it was. It might have been you or I don't think you and I knew each other. I think it was probably Scaff came up to me and said, wow, three of the top four finalists are French.
Or Belgian.
Right? French or Belgian. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So the top, what happened was there was a thing they played in Belgium and some French went there. So the top four, other than Zach, who won, who was American, were Belgian or French.
Right. So the top players, other than Zach, were all Belgian or French. Yeah. And in that moment was this realization of like, wow, this game is really international, right? I mean, and of course that was proven and illustrated.
What does that feel like, Peter, as the owner of Wizards, right? Like
at the
and
time,
you,
yes.
Well, right,
yeah.
And you know, you definitely helped birth this game that has clearly, I mean, in 94 at Gen Con, it's taken over Gen Con, right? People were playing it on all tables in the hallways, like on the floor, everywhere. People were playing Magic. How did that feel when you were like, oh, this is a truly international game? What did that feel like?
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely amazing. There's so many amazing moments. The international angle, though, is, you know, as someone who's always really loved to travel, mm-hmm. someone who's loved not just American culture, but culture of other languages and countries, to see the game really take root, especially in Europe, and later I would learn in Asia as well. At one mm-hmm. time, Japan was as much of the Magic market as all of Europe put together.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah,
yeah.
They really like trading card games in Japan.
Yeah, they really
do. They really do. Even
yeah.
right now, there are, like, in the U.S., there's not a lot of trading card games. There's some. I mean, Magic's the big one. But in Japan, it's exploded. There's mm-hmm. infinite number of them. We make a game at Wizards that is only sold in Japan. It's a trading card game that's only sold in Japan.
Yes.
Called Duel Master.
You know,
Duel Master.
I saw yeah. recently, yeah. not to get too off track, but there was a Japanese variant of Planeswalkers that had amazing, like, yes. manga-style yeah. art that I saw recently. I was yeah. like, ooh, I need to get some of those.
Are those official Magic cards?
Yeah, yeah. So what happened was,
I had no idea.
The Japanese office wanted to do a promotion
right.
in which they, War of the Spark, there was a Planeswalker in every pack. That's its right. big thing. And so there was right. 36 Planeswalkers in the set, inside mm-hmm. the boosters. And so what they did is they took all 36 of them, took them to famous anime
right.
artists,
right.
and they drew them.
Yeah.
And then they were in
yeah.
Japanese boosters. Now, we figured out about this late enough that we really couldn't put them anywhere else, but we did promote them and stuff, and
right,
so
right.
if you buy Japanese War of the Spark, I think 50% of the time you get one of these versus the other, the normal Planeswalkers.
Wow, they're
that's
awesome.
Great.
Yes.
All right, yeah. so that's awesome. Let's go back to Catherine.
Yeah.
So I
meet Catherine. I yep. pitch her on the idea of right. doing some articles.
Right.
And then here's what I learned. Basically, Catherine's whole attitude was, if you give me good ideas and then write to them and turn them in, I will put them in the magazine.
You know, that seems a very sensible approach for the editor of a magazine.
And so what happened was, I was just constantly pitching Catherine stuff.
Right.
She liked my stuff, and so right. I just started writing. So I was writing a lot of stuff. In fact, one of the duelists, I wrote 20% of the one-fifth of the magazine was my content.
Right.
So what happened was, I had the following qualities. I knew magic, I could write, and I turned things in on time. So other sections of Wizards started coming to me and saying, hey, would you mind writing something for us? And
right.
I started writing for lots of different sections of the company. At one point, I was writing for seven sections of the company.
Wow.
And I used to come up to they would fly me places. Like, I went to the pre-release, Ice Age pre-release.
These other departments needed content. The guys in R&D, of course, are focused on making cards, you know. And so here you came.
Right. So I was doing a lot of writing early on. That's what I was doing early on when I was freelancing.
Yeah.
And then you guys flew me to a bunch of different places. I went to the pre-release at Ice, the very first ever pre-release at Ice Age in Toronto.
Yeah. Well, the very first pre-release
ever. Ever.
Right, right.
Yeah.
For any Magic product. I remember that one well. I was there.
Yes,
you
were there.
I was there. It was so much fun because we had, what, like 700 or 800 people?
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
We were like
wow.
totally, I mean, those are small numbers by today's standards.
Right.
But
at the time, it was unheard of.
To have 700 or 800 people show up at a tabletop gaming event, about one game,
sure.
not a convention, but
yeah.
to show up
for
that
one
many
game.
People
yeah.
to show up at a Magic tournament just blew our mind.
Yeah.
But it was this idea of being able to see Magic cards, Magic was still special,
yeah.
but I mean, especially in those days, the mystery of Magic and what was going to be in a set.
Well, it was a pre-release, like meaning no one had seen the cards.
Right.
Right. right. Like, we're going to have a new Magic set. We're going to have a tournament in which nobody's seen the cards.
Right.
Which is a very pure way
right.
to
play. Right,
you
can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Right.
yeah, yeah, yeah. So you were there covering it for the Duelist.
I was covering it for the Duelist. So the thing
yeah.
is, I played in the tournament because I was writing it for as a Duelist, and Catherine wanted the article to be like from inside the tournament.
Oh, right. Sure,
so
sure.
they cut to day two. There was, I think, 32 made it to day two, and
right.
I made it to day two.
Woo-hoo.
And then Scaff sent me down, and he's like, yeah, you can't play in day two.
Because you were on
right. Because I right.
Because you were on staff.
Right,
cause,
I mean,
sort
I,
of,
you guys have flown me. That,
right.
I mean, it made
yeah.
sense. I wasn't upset or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, 33 got to play. So
well,
I,
this way you could pretend like you would have won.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's funny.
I'm sure.
The
I'm
winner
sure
of that tournament I work with now,
yeah.
Dave Humphries, who's
oh,
in the
okay.
Hall of Fame, who's a
right.
pro player.
Sure.
Dave won that tournament.
Right.
And I work with him every day
he
now.
He owes
so.
It all to you because you had to drop out.
Right. I would have taken it from him. So,
exactly.
No,
right.
Dave's very good. So, by the way, at that event, how did the cards come out? Do you remember?
How did the cards come
when
out?
When the cards came out to be given to the players, how did we bring the cards out?
Oh, gosh.
Remember this?
I remember there was something, but I can't remember what it was.
You had hired a security, like there was a truck.
That's right.
And they came in this like security armored truck.
That's right.
And then everything was brought in these like safes or something, like these locked boxes.
Yes,
and the armed guards carried them in. Oh, it's awesome.
Yes. Carried in the
like
cards.
As a spectacle?
Yeah. Right.
Like, that's
half
awesome.
Spectacle, half kind of real, actually, because we were, by that time, had incidences of people who had, like, there was, like, a truck of magic cards that was being shipped from one distributor to a retailer.
Sure.
It got hijacked, literally, and the cards
stolen.
I mean, stuff like this was happening. It was on our radar. But, yeah, there was a little bit of the practicality of it probably led to the spectacle. Like, if we're going to do this, let's really get some mileage out of it.
Yeah.
The other unique thing about this tournament, from a historical standpoint, is it's the only tournament we ever ran that had Anti as part of the tournament. So you would for those that don't know, because Anti has been part of Magic forever.
Yes.
In early Magic, you would, after you drew your seven cards, you flip up your eighth card, and then the winner of the game got the other person's Anti card.
Right.
And the public wasn't really big on Anti. Like, I remember when I first started learning to play, when I learned how to teach Magic, I was taught, say, we're not playing for Anti, right? Like, that's what you were taught to say.
You're taught to say that if you didn't want to play for Anti.
And Anti went away very soon.
Didn't last very long.
But in this tournament, you would play, and then you would win cards from the opponent. And so what happened was, if you won early, it just started snowballing.
Right.
So
that's awesome. So in a sense, it was almost like a league in a way.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
I mean, Anti makes a lot of sense in a league, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you just keep playing the league.
I
remember one of the office leagues.
Yeah, it makes more sense
The league fell apart eventually because Richard won so many games. Richard Garfield won so many games, his deck became degenerate, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, I guess that's when the league is over. Richard won because it was
no one has cards anymore.
no one has any cards. What if I don't have 40 cards? Right. Can I still play? Yeah.
Okay, so you guys flew me to a bunch of different places. And
One
of the places you guys flew multiple times is up to Wizards.
Yes.
So I would come up and do projects. In fact, one of the things I remember is I came up to Wizards to work on this project, and you took everybody on some trip somewhere. So, like this is something that Wizards used to do is you get everybody on a bus and you take them
steam
or something.
I still do that,
Well, I mean, Wizards
not
do that anymore.
I showed up at the bus, but nobody
Peter randomly shows up to Wizards of the Coast. It's like, hello,
when
I'm here.
One week
and
I show up, and the office is literally empty. I mean, there might have been one person there that knew I was coming, but the office was empty because everyone was at this, like, skiing vacation or something, and I'm, like, working alone in this empty office. But anyway, I used to come up to the office every once in a while because I work on projects.
Yep.
And so one time I came up, and this was in the summer of 95, and I met Mike Davis. So for the historical purposes, Mike Davis is the one that, with Richard Garfield, came to pitch you Rally that led to the whole Magic getting made.
Mike Davis was essentially Richard's agent. Terms in so much.
And his best friend. And
so what was Mike doing there at the time?
So Mike was the head of R&D at the time, And so anyway, I talked to Mike, and I said to him, I've been really thinking about this, about whether or not I'd be willing to move to Seattle, because my whole plan was I was going to write TV and stuff.
Sure.
But I finally came to the conclusion that, you know, I said to him, you know what, I would be willing to move to Seattle. And then he said to me,
I finally decided it would be okay if you hired me.
And then he, so I say to him, I'd be willing to move to Seattle. And Mike goes to me, when can you start?
Great.
Because in the early days, for the little history here, Wizards was growing so fast that, like, they were just hiring they were hiring everybody they could because they just needed people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so, like, and you showed any competence and you understood the stuff. You're like, okay, you're hired.
Yeah.
For sure.
But I said that, like, in June or July. So I didn't get hired for months. And so I later called back and said, okay, Mike, what's going on? And it turned out that three different sections were fighting over me. So
Duelist
and the brand team and the R&D team were all very interested in hiring me.
Right.
And so in the end, the decision was that I would work on R&D, but I'd be a liaison to the Duelist, and then I would do some stuff for brand. And so I got hired by R&D. Now, I got hired as a developer. So for those, I mean, Magic has shifted a little bit, but back in the day, there was design and there was development.
Right.
And design kind of made the cards, and development kind of, you know,
play tested. And, that trivializes what they did.
I used to say it's kind of like writing and editing, like aggressive editing.
Okay.
Where like a really good editor, where you can change stuff, will change a lot of things to make it better.
Sure.
And a lot of development was actually changing things, sometimes remaking the cards, but it was really making sure that everything was playing well.
Right.
And I was hired as a developer, not as a designer.
Okay.
Now I'm the head designer now, so obviously My goal at the time was I wanted to be a designer, and I said that to Mike. I said, I'm really interested in design. He goes, we got Richard Garfield. We need developers.
We got Richard Garfield.
And so he's like,
slow down, kid.
Slow down, kid.
So he,
he
basically said, he goes, look, we're hiring developers. That's the job. And yeah. I go, okay, fine. So I started as a developer. In the early days, like now we have like teams, but in the early days, there wasn't teams, just like, I was on every development because that's like there was four of us, so like every team I was on it. Now, like, you know, there's each one has a separate team, and so like these four on that and these four on that. But at the time, I and the three other people I was working with, like, we were the everything. We were the team. So whenever, because a lot of people like Richard and Jim and Scaff had moved on to do other stuff, and they weren't doing Magic because Wizards was doing lots of other things.
Well, we were doing lots of games.
So, you know, I was hired to be one of the Magic guys on R&D.
Right.
So I got hired, and then I started in October of 1995, full-time. So I started freelancing in 94. So I started full-time in 95.
Okay, so let's pause here and get everybody caught up. So it's fall of 1995.
Yes.
So this is post-Fallen Empires.
Yes, Fallen Empires was the 94, was the...
Yes. So this is, you weren't here for that debacle.
I was not. player, I was there, behind the scenes. Yes.
Yeah, so this would have been around Ice Age?
Homelands. Before I started working for Wizards, I had a playtest team that playtested Homelands.
Okay, so
I mean, it just gave feedback on Homelands. We had playtest people that would see cards and give feedback.
Right, so but what was the card set that was coming out closest to when you started?
Well, Homelands.
Homelands.
So, last trip that Wizards took me on before I was officially an employee was to The Gathering in New York City. Do you remember The Gathering?
I do. I remember how much it cost.
Wait, so hold on. I believe it was $1 million, right? Here.
I think so, yeah.
The Gathering, what is this?
So, Homelands was coming out. Now, the funny thing is, with historical context is, Homelands considered like the worst set Magic ever made. But anyway, Homelands was coming out, and Wizards wanted to, you know, go big. Mm-hmm. So they planned, Ronnie Noyes, I believe, planned this event. It was held in New York City. And like I said, I think $1 million was spent on this event, which is, especially at the time, like that's a... Even now, that's a lot of money. But back then...
But, you know, we're still talking about it. So
right,
maybe it was all right. So, okay, so you're coming in on Homelands.
Yeah.
And so what's
Homelands had just come out.
So what's the first thing that you are... What's the first... Well, first of all, you come to Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah.
First of all, what was your impression? I mean, I guess you already knew Wizards pretty well. But, like, walking in to Wizards in 1995, what was...
So here's the story I tell.
What did it feel like?
So my mom drove... I was driving up from L.A. So... Right. The movers moved my stuff, but I had to get my car up, and my mom flew out to drive up with me because it's like a 2-day drive, and you know, it has some company. So we drive up, and we get to Seattle at like 10:00 at night.
Okay.
So my mom's like, "Well, what are we going to do?" Because I think I hadn't rented my apartment yet. So what are we going to do? I go, "Well, let's go to work." She goes, "But it's 10:00." I go, "Oh no, they're there." And so we go in at 10:00 at night, and all of R&D's there because where else would they be? So basically R&D at the time was all these transplants from other places. So what we would do is we'd work, and then we'd just play games at night or various things. And then usually at some point people would go do some more work. And then at some point you'd be tired, you'd go home, and you'd sleep, so you woke up and come back the next day.
Right.
So I come in at 10:00, and they're all there. I'm like, "Hey, it's my mom." And my mom was shocked they were all there. I knew they couldn't be there. And so that my early days of being a wizard, you know, was just hanging around with R&D. Like, one of the games we used to play is there's this giant all-hands room that at the time was empty. And so we would get chairs, like wheelie chairs, and we had hockey sticks, and we had a little ball. Yes. And we would wheel around, and we'd hit the ball. And it was, I don't even know what the game is called. We kind of invented this game.
Sure.
I think it's called hockey, actually.
But we played in chairs. You had to be in the chair. You would wheel around.
Chair hockey.
And I remember we got yelled at from the person who did, like, operations. Because we were making dents in the ceiling.
Probably Jay. Yeah.
Or Mr. Jay or Bob. Barry or Mr. Bob, one of them.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Could you, the walls we can clean. We can't fix the ceiling. Stop hitting things into the ceiling." But anyway, so early R&D was awesome. Like, in some ways, a lot of my sort of learning all about games, I mean, I grew up playing games, but having Richard around, and Richard was just like, every night we'd play a different game. Half of them were German, German, because at the time, German games weren't really, hadn't been brought to America yet. Mm. And we just, every night we'd play a different game, and it was just, you know, awesome. So I have a related question from chat, really quick.
Did you play any of, like, text-based adventures, MUDs, the examples were, like, Gemstone or, like, Dragon Realms?
I played a bunch of text games, like, Hitchhiker's Guide and some of the early Star Trek stuff.
Oh, that was
hard. I think my dad had an Apple IIe, so like the very first Apple product, and we used to have to, we used cassette tapes, this is prior to discs, we had to put a cassette tape and it would make like noise for like 3 minutes, and then you could play Hunt the Wumpus. Yeah. So like when I first got in, it was like super, super simple stuff.
Yeah.
I never got into a lot of MUDs, I mostly was playing solo games.
Yeah.
I played a bunch of text-based games, but they were more one-on-one, so I didn't really play
MUD. And then did that influence kind of what you were writing and doing at the time?
Well, the one thing that's interesting is I got involved in the Usenet pretty early on because of Magic.
So what happened was
Magic came out. I learned that there was a place to talk about Magic.
And that's how I met Richard Garfield through Mike Davis.
Oh, did you? Okay.
On Usenet. Rec.games.board.design.
Yes. So I would go to the Usenet, and at the time I was doing the puzzles and stuff, and like I would chat with people and I'd answer, like people could say, how do you solve the puzzle? And I go, what do you think? And they'd send me the answer. I go, that's wrong or that's right or something. And I started going on the Usenet, and I started just chatting with people on the Usenet.
Yeah.
And then as I started freelancing for Wizards, I started like being a little bit more official online, where I'm like, oh, well, you know, I have some insight, I can answer stuff. And then when I got hired, I was trying to convince them that we need to be more present on the stuff. And so Tom Weil and I ended up being...
I finally figured that out, by the way. Yeah, just a couple years ago. Okay. Yeah, being online is important.
Yes.
Mauro, you were the very first Wizards community manager.
I was early.
Yes, we didn't have that title.
Right.
To the extent... Yeah, I think it's... I might have been the very first community.
Sure, okay.
But the funny thing is, on the Usenet, I and Tom Wiley... Yeah. Who was our first rules manager.
Tom Wiley,
The two that were on all the time, Tom tended to answer rules questions, and I would answer other stuff.
Okay.
And then that led to, then Catherine came to me and said, we'd like you to write an insider column in the Duelist. It was called Insider Trading. Right. And the whole idea was, it's like, it, you know, it's an outsider's view, but from the inside, and you know, like somehow they hired me, and now I'm spilling secrets from the inside so you guys can learn about the game.
Right.
It was all planned. I wasn't actually, but it, you know. But anyway, I did that, and that eventually would lead to my column. Now I write a column online called Making Magic. So there's just this long thread of me writing from the Usenet to writing in the Duelist to writing online.
I think this idea of the community management, in those days we just didn't have a word for it, right?
Like
people like Mark, myself for a while, and Tom Wiley, it was almost like we were just doing this on our own.
Yeah.
It wasn't like companies didn't realize.
But you knew that it was important to be involved with the community that was consuming and playing your product. Right.
Like you did. It wasn't managed by companies in those days. It just happened. It was just like a happy accident.
Right. No one told me to do it. I just did it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And the other thing is, I have a writing background. So one of the things is I liked writing.
Yeah.
So whenever I had a chance to write, I would write. And so that just, I mean, if you look at my history, it's like, I think I now produce a million words a year on Magic.
Wow.
And that's just, I like to write. So every place I can do that, and I make a podcast, and I have a blog where I answer questions. And that just came from me liking to write.
Sure.
And then what happened was over time, that ended up becoming like more official in the sense that like I'm now an official spokesperson. Like, like certain people are allowed to sort of like, You can't just, in Wizards, for example, you can't just go on and say whatever you want. There's like a lot of rules and stuff. And there's certain spokespeople that are sort of allowed to say things. Now, even I will check on, like, I don't get to say anything, but, you know, I have a little more freedom.
Sure. Right.
I and Aaron, for example, are the two spokespeople for Magic. So we'll say things and talk about stuff. And but anyway, that it's funny that it came out of not like anyone had ever assigned it to me or anyone asked me.
Right.
It
just was. So passionate.
Yes. Right. And I really like interacting with the public. It's something I've always enjoyed. And the cool thing about Magic is, like, Magic is just a really excitable crowd. You know what I'm saying? They're very invested.
Right.
They're very much online. It's a very tech-savvy group. And, you know, I love the community of Magic. It's an awesome community. And so I just had fun early on interacting with them. And the other thing is, when you make creative stuff, when you spend a lot of time and energy, you know, pouring your heart out and making something you really care about, like, you really care what people think about
it.
It's a big deal. And so when things would come out, I would share with how we made it. And so here's another interesting thing. Maybe you know this or not.
Okay.
So at the time I started writing my column, It was not industry standard to share how you made things. In fact, it was frowned upon. Right. And I just said, I think it'd be better for us if we spent all this energy making a really good game. Let me educate the people. And I want them to see all the details we put into it, because we put a lot of details into it.
Right. In some sense, it kind of it's a way to laud our style, the discipline and the time that we put into it.
Now, I don't know if you remember this, so I'll tell a story about you, but you might not remember.
Love it when we get stories that Peter may or may not know.
So,
that's my favorite part of Fireside.
I'm writing stories, I'm sharing behind the scenes stuff, and there was a bunch of people that were really concerned and thought I was giving away the farm or whatever. And so there was a big meeting that it was in your office.
Okay.
Where I had to defend myself, where I'm saying, here's why I'm doing this. Here's why I think it's a good idea to write about this. And I know people don't do this. I know this isn't the standard right now, but this is why we should do it. And I convinced you, and you said yes. And you said, yeah, let him write. And so you let me do it, and...
Let him write.
Let him write.
So...
Writers must write. Artists must create art. Mark Rosewater must write, yes.
And now the funny thing is, it's become the industry standard, if you put out a game and you don't write a diary of it, that's considered to be, you're not doing it right, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's kind of funny that, but anyway, whether you were aware or not, you were behind, woo-hoo. You gave the thumbs up, and so.
These stories are always kind of random as to how well they turn out.
Peter's please let it be good. Let it be good.
I have lots of good stories. So.
So, I don't want to slide past this Homelands thing real quick. Like you said, you worked on Homelands.
You helped play test it. What happened was we had a playtest team, so they would send us the cards and we would give our notes.
Right.
Now, they didn't listen to most of our notes, but we gave notes. Something we used to. We don't really do this quite the same way anymore.
Okay.
But we used to have playtest teams that were external to the building.
Right.
And so I playtested the set, meaning we played and we gave them notes. They didn't listen to most of our notes.
So as an employee of the company,
though,
we talked about your first impressions and you're arriving with mom.
What
was, once you guys stopped playing hockey, what was the first thing that you were actually assigned to do? What was your first job?
My first job, the Magic team was four people, so... Right. I was on every Magic team.
Right.
That's the very first thing I did was I was put on the Alliance's development team.
Okay.
Which was 13 people.
Yeah.
Because here's what I think happened is Fallen Emperor comes out, didn't go well.
Right.
Ice Age came out, Ice Age went pretty well.
Ice Age went great.
Then Homelands came out, didn't go so well.
Right.
So there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure on, two of the last three didn't go that well. We really need a success.
Right.
So there was a gap. There was a 7-month gap between Homelands coming out and Alliances coming out, which is the longest gap in the history of Magic between
it. We had a fifth edition maybe in between those, or revised.
Maybe a core set.
I think we had a core
maybe,
set.
There might have been a core set.
Yeah.
But as far as new.
In those days, I think we tended to think of as a release comparable to the expansion.
Right.
Now we know better, or you guys, I would say by the late 90s, we knew better that the core sets were a necessary thing, but wasn't something people were generally going to get real excited about.
The other thing that happened that summer is, Chronicles came out, which also caused all sorts of problems.
Right.
Chronicles was also reprinting a bunch of cards, and
anyway,
Magic.
I flubbed up a question when I was on the interview with the professor. I flubbed up a question about Chronicles. I remember.
Okay,
now.
So
I'm boned up on Chronicles.
So here's what's going on: is there's a lot of pressure of the set to be good.
Right.
So
right.
Every person who was in R&D, when I say I was the 13th person on the team, I think there was 13 people in R&D. Everybody was on the team. Everybody.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Scaff and Jim and Charlie and Joel and everybody who was there was on the team.
Right.
And now, obviously, we have a shorter, the fact that I was there 7 months later came out means Magic takes longer to put things out than we did back then.
Right.
But I was on the team for maybe a month and a half. That was my very first thing I did, was be on the development team and here's my claim to fame. This is my claim to fame I made three cards that got in the set. And there was a card at the time it wasn't called Force of Will. It was a card that was the card Force of Will, which people should know. And it had some name, some really dumb name. I forget what the name was.
Right.
And I said, they can't have this name. This is the most awesome card in the set. It can't have a dumb name. So I went to the people who named it, and I said, I think it needs a better name. And they're like, well, give us one. I spent time working on it. I finally came up with Force of Will. And I said, okay, Force of Will. And they're like, fine. So anyway, I named Force of Will. That's my...
Nice. Okay, cool.
Anyway, one of my favorite things I did during that period. So early on, I was doing development.
Right.
And then what happened was I wanted design, right? That was
right,
my goal.
Right, right.
So I had talked with Richard and I'd become friends, and Richard had not designed anything since Arabian Nights.
Right, right.
So Richard had expressed that he was interested in working on another Magic set. So yeah. I said, if I led a set, would you be on the set? He goes, sure.
Right.
So I go to Joel, wherever I needed to convince, and go, I would like to lead a set. And Richard said he would be on the set. And they're like, Richard would be on the set? Yeah, Richard would be on the set. They go, okay, Richard's going to be on the set. I'm like, yeah. He goes, oh, okay.
Very clever, Mark. Very clever. I see how you work. It's, yeah,
and then they
clever.
Let me fill out the team. I put Charlie Catino on the team, and I put sure. Mike Elliott on the team. So yeah. we rounded out the team.
We were talking about duelists or duel masters earlier.
Yes,
Mike,
yes.
Mike Elliott is the.
Yeah, Mike and I worked on duel masters.
He's had quite a career.
Yeah, yeah, Mike. Yeah. Very. So anyway, so the four of us made a set, a strong yeah. team. And then Tempest went over. Tempest was the set. Tempest right. went over very well, and then I was on my way. So that nice. Was. It was all about banking on Richard's cred.
Sorry, what was that set you made?
Tempest.
Yeah, okay, I had never played that one, so tell me a little bit about that.
Tempest came out in 1997.
And that's in
okay.
the Urza Saga block, right? Urza block?
It was part of the Weatherlight Saga.
Weatherlight
yeah.
block.
So what happened okay. was at the time, so Mike Ryan
right.
And I, so Mike Ryan was an editor at the time. Mm-hmm. He and I believed that Magic should have an ongoing story.
Right.
Because it did,
mm-hmm. right.
And so we pitched this idea of a 3-year story arc that we called the Weatherlight Saga.
Okay.
And so the idea was there's this flying ship, and there's this crew on the flying ship,
sure.
and the captain got kidnapped, and someone who yeah. used to be on the ship had to come back, you know, because he had left the ship. And anyway, there's this whole story, mm-hmm. and we pitched it, and the brand team said, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
And so we got brought on to that. That story doesn't end well, but anyway, Mike and I did not continue the whole way being in charge of that. That's his own story. But anyway, I was very involved in the story at the time, and that Tempest was the beginning of that story. So
okay.
we did this thing where we told the story through the art, and then yeah. we made a little guide where we showed the art in order and told the story, because like the story was told over like 100 pieces of art.
Right.
Anyway, it was very cool.
That's super rad.
Yeah, it was very rad. So Tempest was really my sort of, the whole idea of Tempest was it was the beginning of the story.
Yeah.
The preamble was called Weatherlight, but it was the main start of the story. It had some new mechanics, and it had, like I said, it had a great design team, and it was kind of my pitch to Wizards to say, I'd like to design.
Yeah.
And the Tempest did really, really well. And
the Tempest did great. It's
and then from then, I stopped. I mean, I did some development still, but I slowly transitioned to design, and then in 2003, I became head designer. So.
Right. And I was trying to reconstruct, that was from the story, but from the block structure.
Right, Mirage was the first of the block structure.
Okay, so Mirage was the, but with the that Tempest was in, what was it a standalone?
No, it was Tempest, Stronghold, Exodus. It
okay.
was a block.
Yeah, there we go, Tempest. So it was the Tempest block.
Right, so what had happened was, right. When Richard first, the game started to get going, he had a lot of people who had worked with him as playtesters design sets.
Right. Right.
And one of them was called Menagerie. So the people he'd met at his bridge club, right. they designed Menagerie, which ended up being Mirage and Visions.
Right. Right.
And then Mirage was the first block we had made where it was three right. sets together. Right. Weatherlight right. ended up being the preamble to the story, but was tied at the end of the
it was the last set.
It was the third set in the Mirage block.
In the Mirage block.
Right.
Got it.
And
Got
then
it.
Tempest Got was it. The second block we ever did. And yep. that was Tempest, Stronghold Exodus.
Yep.
And
yep.
then the
and I
the
think
story.
Those were the first sets that came out that we had PCD pre-constructed decks.
Correct. Right. Tempest was the very first pre-constructed deck.
Pre-constructed deck
yes.
set.
Yes. I built one
so,
of those.
Yeah. So you know one thing I've been doing lately is yeah. I really like the pre-constructed decks.
Oh, yes.
I got pre-constructed for all the sets of
Same.
Magic,
right.
starting with Tempest
okay.
Up until yeah. I left.
Yeah.
Right. And so I had, but I always kind of wish I had pre-constructed decks from the earlier sets.
Right,
right.
Okay.
We just started it.
We didn't start till Tempest.
Right. Yeah. And so I went out and bought a whole bunch of cards recently on
okay.
the secondary market. Bought a bunch of old cards, and I've been building.
Oh, making your own pre-constructed decks.
Making our own pre-constructed okay. decks. Kind of the same idea, you know, like this is going to feature this, you know, this is the Antiquities. And it's
right,
going
right.
to have four decks featuring Antiquities
okay.
cards and stuff
oh, cool.
like that.
That's very cool.
And then just leave them yeah. as constructed decks. We'll play many times.
So, I like that. That's
hey,
awesome.
Maybe you want to come over sometime and play some.
Yeah, that sounds
we'll,
fun.
We'll do like a league. And create some decks.
Love
yeah,
it.
Maybe we could do it on Gen Con TV. That'd be fun.
Love
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. So there we go. No. Roped him in. Sign
Done.
Him up. Sign
Done.
Him up. Done.
Well, let's yeah. do it.
So, hey, actually, I want to ask you about totally change topics,
okay.
but a different set.
Okay.
You were involved, were you not, with Unglued?
I was. So here's the story.
Because I just want to say a little
yeah.
more.
Because okay.
I think I remember Unglued. I always felt like I had a secret ally with you on Unglued, because I loved the idea of Unglued, and you always seemed really enthusiastic about it.
I was, very much.
Yeah, okay, so tell us some Unglued.
So the story of Unglued is, so Bill Rose and Joel Mick came up with the idea of a silver-bordered set, which was a set in which the cards didn't go into the tournament. Now, at the time, everything was, like, there wasn't, like, back in the day, there was one tournament format. It was Magic. There wasn't formats yet. And then we made Type 1 and Type 2, which standard was called Type 2. So anyway, they came to me and they said, here's the idea we have. It's a silver border set. It does things we can't do normally. Do something with that. Now, I'm a comedy writer. That's my background. So I said, well, we could do a parody set. We could do humor. And we could just do crazy things that Magic doesn't do. And that was the whole idea behind it, was just, let's do wacky things. And one of the... So... When I was flying to Gen Con one of those years, I sat next to Chris Rush. Chris Rush shared the story that he had come up with this idea for lands that the whole thing was art. And he had pitched it and nobody wanted to do it. And I'm like, that sounds awesome. Why wouldn't they want to do it? He goes, he said, who would want those? So I put them in Unglued because I'm like, well, it's the weird set. Who's going to stop me? So I put them in. and now, like, four lands are like a staple of Magic. People are all excited. Like, did this set of four lands in it? So, but it started. So the fun thing about the unset was just doing things that, like, I thought would be cool that no one let us do. We had token cards for the first time in Unglued.
So I'm not familiar with Unglued. Can you tell me a little bit
about...
Yeah, go
back to the basics.
So the idea of it is, A, it's humor-based. So it's a lot of parodies and lots of humor.
Random stuff.
And it just does... The rule when we made it was, we can only do things in it that we can't do in Black Border. So there are physical things and verbal things and just things that in the rules don't work. Like, for example...
Give her an example.
This card's from Unhinged, but it's a good example. I made a card for a set, and the card said, things that say until end of turn, instead just say permanently. So things just never end. So if you giant grow something, it's forever +3/+3.
Like, it just keeps growing?
No. Just, it doesn't end. So giant growth says +3/+3 until end of turn. And I made a card that said, well, instead of until end of turn, it just says permanently.
It's now +3/+3.
It's forever +3/+3.
So not multiplying.
Not multiplying, just forever. But the idea was any effect you did that's temporary becomes permanent. And I thought that was an awesome card. So I go to whatever the rules person at the time was, and I made the card, and they're like, yeah, we can't do that. And I'm like, why can't we do that? He's like, he explains for like 5 minutes. I don't understand any of it, but he's like, we can't do that. So I just put it in a silver border, and like now we made it. And
now it's done.
There's a lot of cards that, like, it's not that the people can't understand them. Like, the rules can't handle them because they're weird. But the audience can handle them. And so we make a lot of, like.
So it sounds very zany.
It is very zany.
And it sounds very swingy.
And it's not at all in tournament play. I mean, you don't play these in tournaments. They're
goofy, right?
And because of that, though, I think there was a certain amount of controversy. I mean, there were people in R&D that hated this. There were people in the company that hated that we did Unglued.
So let me tell you a card.
But I always loved it.
This is my favorite card from Unglued. It's called Squirrel Farm. So what you did is you took a card from your hand. You covered up the name of the artist, and you showed it to your opponent. And if they couldn't name the artist, they got one guess, you got a squirrel.
What's a squirrel?
Like a little token of a squirrel, a 1-1 little token.
A 1-1 squirrel creature.
Yeah, a little squirrel creature. I made a deck around this. And the most fun of this wasn't showing them different cards, was thinking how long you had to wait before you showed them the same card that they still couldn't remember who it was. And so what you would do is show them this one, show them this one, show them this one, show them this one again. And if you could time it right, they just couldn't remember, and it was a thing of beauty.
And so you just ended up with like a little squirrel army?
And then you beat them with squirrels. That's the whole point. Is how well do you know artists, and then I'm going to beat you with squirrels. And like often we talk about running into the wrong player. The one it was never a deck matchup. It was just, oh, you know artists. I'm in trouble. You know, that's, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, yeah, that is, you know.
That's too funny.
Okay, so we got 10 minutes left. This hour has gone by fast. Yes. So,
it has.
5 minutes. Okay. You pick a story. Any story you want to tell. Or if you freeze up, I'll ask you a question.
Give me just a prompt. I have lots of stories. Give me a year.
1997.
Okay. So 1997 would be the year that Tempest came out.
Okay.
Right? That's the year that Tempest came out. So, and...
Also the year we bought TSR.
Oh, is the year we bought TSR? I thought 98. Well, it closed in 98, right? Oh, no. Hasbro bought us in 98. 97, we bought D&D.
Yeah, Hasbro bought us in 99.
99?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it was 98.
Somebody can check.
Anyway, I think it was 98 because I got married in 98. I thought they bought us in 98. Anyway.
4 minutes left.
Okay, so we in 1997, you bought, or Wizards bought.
We bought.
D&D.
Right.
Here, I remember this,
glorious.
By the way.
It was
you
glorious.
Were so, that's the most excited I've ever seen you.
Right.
And you're very excitable.
Who wouldn't
so this,
be?
So this is.
That's a great deal.
I remember you came to, you were announcing officially to us. We'd heard like rumors, right. But you announced it. And that is the happiest I've ever seen you.
Aww.
Was the day you announced that we got D&D. You were so excited.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I mean, and he's excitable. So that's saying a lot.
But not today, the most excitable person in the room.
Well, I'm excitable. But here's a very fun
awesome.
Story, which is actually 95, not 97, but it's a fun. It's a story about you.
Okay.
Uh-oh. It's about me and you. It's
okay.
a combination.
Okay.
It's a story my mom tells. My mom tells one story about you.
Oh my gosh.
Which is it's secretly about me, but you're involved in the story.
All right. Great.
Is so in 95, I come to work in 95 in October 95,
right.
And in December of 95 was Black Wednesday, which was. We had to shut down some stuff in the company, and well, Magic was doing very well.
We got out of role-playing games.
Yes, we got out of role-playing games. And it was a big deal.
And until later, when we would get back into them, when we acquired D&D.
And it was, it was a big, big deal. And I had just moved from Los Angeles. I changed my life and moved up here. And my mom was visiting me, and she was really worried because, like, you just moved everything to come up here. So she wanted to talk to you about, she was just concerned.
Right.
And so...
This is very sweet.
Yeah, so she comes to talk to you. And
Mrs.
Says,
Morrow is like,
yes, my
Peter.
Mom. And she's like, she was just honestly worried. And she said, does Mark need to worry about anything? Because, look, you know, he spent a lot coming up here.
Right.
And
right.
you said to him, oh, we'd never fire Mark. He's like two people.
He's so, worth two people.
Yeah, like he does the work of two people. So, and that my mom always tells that story about how she was really worried, and you put her at ease.
Oh,
and
good.
So,
oh,
see,
good.
I always tell good stories about you.
That's good. I know. It's great. And Gen Con. This is great. It's fantastic. Yeah, yeah. It was a tough stretch. You know. It was a tough stretch. So. Yeah. Well, good. Good. I just remember. Well, yeah.
Chat's very interested in having Mark back on the regular. Just so you know,
back on,
like the Mark month fireside.
Yeah. Oh, the Mark
season. Isn't
the season
premiere of the Mark Rosewater show. Yeah. Behind the scenes of Mark Rosewater is doing well. Good. Woo-hoo.
So what is does Chat want to know a story? We can tell one more story. They have a topic.
Yeah. Well, I have a few. So tell us a little bit about like the years 97 through 99.
97 through 99?
Yeah.
Well, so the interesting thing in the...
So your first set had just come out.
Tempest came out in 97. Right. It went really well. The problem was at the time, we only made so many Magic sets and there were a lot of people that were making Magic sets. So we had to kind of jockey to get sets.
Right.
Now, they
right.
gave me Unglued because no one wanted it but me. But they gave me Unglued. and then the next set I worked on was Urza's Destiny, which was the third set in the Urza Saga block. And the unique thing about it is, other than Richard Garfield, it was the only set with a one-person design team. I designed it. There was no one on my team.
Wow.
And I had a lot of fun with it. But that whole block, see if you remember this story. So we make Urza Saga. Magic breaks like you wouldn't believe. We get called to Peter's office.
Breaks you got to explain that.
Well, so what happened was, we would later get we would get people off the Pro Tour to develop our sets. The people early on were, I think we had some design skills. Development was not our strong suit. We ended up making a set called Urza Saga, the whole block, that was, to call it broken is really not giving.
Baroken!
Yeah. That's
right.
William used to call it Baroken.
Baroken.
So we make a set and it, horrible things happen. It's called Combo Winter. Bad things happen. So the R&D team, for the only time this has ever happened, get called to the CEO's office, and Peter chews us out. And it's the maddest I've ever seen Peter. Like, that's the happiest I've ever seen. He was very unhappy. And it's the only time that as R&D we've ever like been chewed out by the CEO. And he's like, if this ever happens again, you're all fired.
I did not say that.
You did.
No
you
way.
Did. You did.
No.
Because repeated masks happened because of that. You said, if this happens in the next set, you're fired. And the next set, it wasn't so strong because we didn't want to get fired.
That is too funny.
I never said that. I never.
Peter's
never.
Denying it. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, to be fair, we messed up Magic. So, I mean, to be fair to you, it was. It was not our shining
Chad moment.
Chad agrees.
Saga was pretty busted.
We all deserve to be chewed out once in a while. I mean, that's just the way work works, you know?
Oh, no, I mean, once in a while we messed up. I mean, to be fair, we messed up. I mean, I don't begrudge you yelling at us. We messed up. So.
Yeah, well.
But,
so what was, like, the, what are you most proud of?
What am I most proud of? Like, of all my children, who do I love the most? Yep. I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, Unsets, I have a warm feel for. I mean, Tempest being my first set. Ravnica and Innistrad and Zendikar are all things that really, really the people latched on to. We just made War of the Spark, which was really cool.
Yeah.
There's a set coming out in this fall that I'm going to announce at San Diego Comic-Con that I've been trying to do for 10 years that I'm very excited for.
Ooh.
That I can't tell you today, but
we should make a little mental note to make sure that we mention it when it comes out, and we can talk about it.
Absolutely.
We'll put a little plug for your San Diego Comic-Con.
But I mean, here's the thing I love the most. This is the thing I actually love the most, is I love the fact that I have a job. This October will be 24 years.
Right. Wow.
That I don't think a lot, not everybody has a job that they love.
Yeah.
And it's a dream job. So I thank you for hiring me. And I mean, I've been doing it 24 years. I'll probably do it till I fall over. I love this job. It's a lot of fun. I love the audience. I love the game. The game is an amazing game. Richard made what I consider to be the best game ever. So it is a really amazing game. And it's an amazing game that 26 years in, we're just doing new stuff with it. So that is pretty impressive.
So that was a question earlier was, when are you going to retire? And your answer is, not anytime soon.
No time soon.
It'll be just before he dies, right? Because he's just like, he's gonna work to the last possible minute.
I mean, somehow there'll be a pre-release and then I'll just fall over or something.
And that was the life of Mark Rosewater.
If we knew this was happening, lasts to 2051.
As long as I'm passionate, enjoying what I do, I have no plans to stop. And I mean, magic is as fun now as it was 24 years ago. So I really, really enjoy it. So.
All right, so we like to close with sort of anything you can talk about. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you doing at Wizards of the Coast now? You kind of touched on it.
Okay,
what is your role at Wizards of the Coast now, and is there anything that you can say about what
you're doing? So here's my role is, I use a metaphor, the house building metaphor, which is, we're building a lot of houses. And my job in the role of a vision design, that is, I and my team are the architects, meaning we are making a lot of blueprints. So I have 4 months to make a blueprint for a set, then I have 4 months to make the next blueprint, then 4 months to make the next blueprint, and that just goes on forever.
Okay.
And then in my spare time, maybe I work on a supplemental set or something.
So let me, that reminds me of a question. Something we wrestled with back in the early to mid 90s, maybe when you were there, I'm not sure, was can magic always be interesting?
Yes.
Like, are there enough ideas for cards, or is at some point we're just gonna run, not we anymore, but you and your team are just going to run out of cool things to do with magic, and you know.
Well, I've been saying this forever. If you go back and you can see me saying this in writing for years and years and years, I believe magic can outlive us all. I believe, like, I will die one day in my wake, people will be playing magic. Yeah. And, you know, I believe my kids will, their whole life, they can play magic. Like, I believe that magic is going to last a long, long time. And look, we've done it. I've been doing this now for 24 years, and like, there's things, we work 2-3 years ahead.
Yeah,
there's amazing things you guys have no idea, the audience has no idea, that's out there, that are really cool, amazing things that we hadn't done yet. And we said, what if we do this?
So, good deal. Good deal.
Magic, like I said, if you have fun.
We're counting on you, Mark.
Well,
we are counting on you. I speak for the entire internet.
So,
at
like,
this
for
moment,
example,
all of the internet.
We are counting on you
this fall,
to keep magic interesting.
This fall, I'm about to announce Archery's the code name, right? Archery's this fall. So, we have worked on baseball, cricket, diving, equestrian, fencing, golf, handball. Those are all things
that
in various...
That is a big departure from what I remember magic as.
Well, that's our code names.
Oh, code names. Okay,
got it. Those are good. So those are all, and those aren't core sets. Those aren't supplemental sets. Those are just actual, you know, standard legal sets that we're all in some level of thing we're going on right now.
Right.
And all that's going on right now.
Awesome.
So there are a lot of balls in the air.
That's fabulous.
That's awesome.
That's great. Well, thanks so much for being on our show.
Well, thank you for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for joining us. This has been Fireside with Peter Atkinson. Our guest today was Mark Rosewater, who is the man in charge of a lot of magic design and development for the future at Wizards of the Coast. So thank you for being on our show. Thanks also to Kristen Jensen, who has poor Beverly Marshall Saling, typical co-host.
I feel better, Beverly.
Yeah, I hope you feel better, Beverly. Thank you for pitching in
of
and
course.
Joining us, my director.